Good afternoon and welcome to the Methods Panel Subgroup Number 3 Measure Evaluation Call. My name is Miranda Kuwahara with the National Quality Forum, and I'm joined by my colleagues Karen Johnson, Ashley Wilbon, Poonam Ball, and May Nishan. We'll begin with a roll call of the Methods Panel Subgroup Number 3 members. Do we have David Sella on the line?
Yes, speaking.
Great. Bijan Bora?
Yes, I'm here.
Wonderful. Matt Austin?
Good afternoon.
Jeffrey Geppert?
I'm here.
Mike Stoto? And Lacey Fabian?
Here.
Great. So before we dive into measure discussions, I wanted to make a few housekeeping remarks. A discussion guide was sent to Methods Panel Subgroup Number 3 members yesterday afternoon, and that document will guide today's measure discussions and will follow the order presented on that document. Consensus was not reached for the first 8 measures presented on the discussion guide and are subsequently slated for discussion today. All other measures received passing ratings and will not be discussed during today's call unless a member of the subgroup would like to take this opportunity to pull one of those measures for discussion. If you choose not to discuss those additional measures, the decisions from your preliminary analyses will be made final for those passing measures. So I'll pause here briefly to give you an opportunity to review those 2 measures. And those measures are number 2377, defect care for AMI, and 2459, in-hospital risk-adjusted rate of bleeding events for patients undergoing PCI. Okay. Hearing none, we'll continue on. In that same email containing your discussion guide was a link to a SurveyMonkey. We ask that you pull that survey up now and cast your votes as we move along through the measure discussions. Staff will prompt you when to cast those votes at the end of each measure discussion. Timing is limited on today's call. We have roughly 13 minutes to discuss each measure. And although we would like to come to consensus on all of these measures, we do have a follow-up call scheduled on Thursday, October 18th from 2 to 4 p.m. to discuss any items we don't get to today. And finally, I do want to note that this is a public call. However, there will be no opportunity, for public comment, and subgroup members cannot direct questions to developers. For record-keeping purposes, we ask that you say your name each time you provide remarks. And with that, I'll pass the ball over to Karen Johnson.
Hey, Matt, go ahead. Sure.
You had mentioned a SurveyMonkey poll. Where do we find that? That wasn't clear to me.
Sure. So that is in the email that went out yesterday afternoon that also held the materials for today's call. It held the discussion guide and the agenda. And the link to be in the body of the email.
A link to the committee SharePoint site, but that's the only. Oh, there, I see it. Okay, it was just small. Okay, I found it. Thank you.
Exciting.
All right. So this is Karen. Thank you again for joining us today. We hope this call goes smoothly. We'll see. We've done 2 so far, and both have gone well. We were able to. Not only come to consensus on the various measures that we needed to discuss, but also I think people in general learn from each other. We learned some things. So, so far things have been going pretty well. So we hope that you like this kind of change to our process in terms of how we are evaluating and rating measures. And we'd love after the call any feedback you might have in terms of, how things went today, the materials that we provided you, that sort of thing. Just a couple of things to reiterate this discussion guide. We wanted a tool to help us facilitate the call so we don't get kind of way off base and off tangent talking about fun stuff that maybe not absolutely critical things. So that's why we did a discussion guide. But I will point out that in the preliminary analyses that you guys did, many of you made a lot of comments. Not every one of those found their way onto this discussion guide. Sometimes we try to group things and kind of organize things that way. Sometimes just some things felt like they were things you wanted to point out, but not necessarily things that we need to talk about. So just want to let you know, if you feel like something that you really want to note hasn't made it to the discussion guide, feel free to bring up any of those kinds of things. That's absolutely fine. Just a reminder in terms of what will be presented to the standing committees. This was a question that came up from one of the subgroups, so I thought it was probably a useful thing to tell you guys. It depends on whether a measure is passed or not. So if a measure is passed, both viability and validity by you guys, then that measure does go to the appropriate standing committees. And along with the measure will go a summary that we will write based on your preliminary analyses and today's discussion, as well as the preliminary analysis forms that you guys filled out. So all of that stuff will go to the standing committee. If a measure does not pass today, or if we need it on a second call, then that measure doesn't actually go in its entirety to the standing committee. So the standing committee will not be considering it this cycle. What we will tell them is that measure XYZ was considered by the methods panel. It didn't pass, and we'll provide a very brief rationale for why it didn't pass. But we would not be sharing the summaries, and we would not be sharing your preliminary analyses. Instead, that information would go back to the developer in hopes that that would help them refurbish and hopefully submit again next cycle. So that's the process there. Just another FYI about the SurveyMonkey that you've opened up. That is not a live vote, or at least let me put it this way. We can't see your votes right now, so we won't know if you guys have actually passed or not passed on one of our criteria. So we will have all the discussions that we need to have, realizing that the actual determination of the ratings have to wait until after the call when we get all of your votes in. I think that is all that I wanted to say, kind of in addition to Miranda's opening comments. So with that, just to let you know how we set this up here, we just kind of farmed out the measures amongst our team. So we have different people here at NQF that are going to lead us through the evaluation. So we'll start out by just telling you a little bit about the measure itself and introducing the measure and where the ratings fell, and then we'll segue right into the actual items that we need to do. Okay. So does anybody have any questions before we get going?
Yeah, Karen, this is Jeff. Can you just remind me sort of the definition of consensus?
That's a really good question. It is, we really wanted it to be greater than 60% would feel like a measure passes, okay? That's what NQF's rules have always been. We have to think about that a little bit with these groups because of the math involved. We have a couple measures that have come through so far that there's still been a split, a 3-5 split, and that's right at that 60% cut point. Usually we want more than 60%, so we have to figure that out, and we have to figure out, you know, is that close enough to go ahead and send on the methods to the standing committee, or is that something that we feel like it's just not quite there, and we'll push back. Obviously, things that are kind of majority, if something goes, you know, 4 moderate, 1 insufficient, then we would rate it moderate. So does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A little wishy-washy. Yeah. A little wishy-washy. We'll get it figured out in the next few days. And quite frankly, to tell you the truth, we're going to wait till all of the results come in and make our determination then. Any other questions? All right, let's get started. May is going to do our first one. So May, walk us through 3309.
Sure, I'll tee up the information here for discussion. So we're going to first discuss 3309, the risk standardized survival rate for in-hospital cardiac arrest. So this is a new measure. However, I'm sure a lot of you remember that this was actually submitted for the methods panel to review in fall 2017. It went through to us and went to the standing committee. However, it was withdrawn from standing committee evaluation due to data discrepancies in their submission material. So they're back again and to update their information. So this measure is an estimate of the hospital level risk standardized survival rate for patients aged 18 and older who experience an in-hospital cardiac arrest. It is specified for hospitals with 20 or more cases in-hospital cardiac arrest during the measurement period. And the risk standardized survival rate is calculated by the weighted average unadjusted hospital survival rate for the entire study sample times the hospital's predicted survival rate divided by the expected survival rate. So this is an outcome measure. The source is a registry. It's to get with the guidelines data registry. It is the facility level for level of analysis. They did perform risk adjustment with 9 risk factors. So for ratings for reliability, I think across the board, everybody was happy with it, so moderate across the board. They performed score level reliability testing using the signal-to-noise method, and they did not perform data element reliability testing, and that's okay. It is a new measure. It's not needed for this. Panelists did express a little bit more desire for more information than just means and medians of the results. But overall, reliability, nobody had any problems with it. For validity, they performed a face validity, and that is okay because it is a new measure. So face validity is okay. It meets NQF requirements because it is a new measure. They've given us results for the face validity, including discussing reasoning behind the disagreements. So regarding face validity, 71% either agreed or strongly agreed that the scores obtained will provide an accurate reflection of quality and can be used to distinguish good and poor quality. They also performed some risk adjustment. There, however, was no conceptual rationale provided regarding the potential relationships between social risk factors and the outcome of interest, which here is the survival after heart attack. They did note that clinicians responding to in-hospital cardiac arrest would not be aware of a patient's social or economic risk, and would therefore not be influenced by these considerations. They also provided some C statistics and R-squared numbers, all of from their initial derivation cohort, as well as from their 2011 through 2015 data, as well as 2012. So all of the scores are very similar. They said this indicated that the initial risk standardized survival rate model validates their initial risk-standardized survival rate model. All right, there was some concern regarding missing data. They did say that there was missing data in less than 0.1% of the patients in the registry. And then data on other patient variables has officially 0% missing data. And also, do not resuscitate status was not accounted for in the measure. All right. And for validity, we did have a split here, and I believe that was split mostly because some thought that this was actually a maintenance measure. It's not, so for a new measure, face validity is okay. It's accepted by NQF. So we can start off there. Would anyone like to discuss any concerns they had regarding validity?
This is Jeff. I think I can, well, I mean, in terms of like sort of cutting to the chase, I mean, I rated it low, I think, given what you just said about the fact that it's a new measure and the concerns that were listed here. I would probably change mine to moderate. So that would put us at the 3.5 threshold.
Yeah, that's helpful. This is Dave. Thank you. I couldn't understand where the concern was about missing data.
Well, I think the only concern about missing data, I mean, and maybe this is the interpretation, is my sense is that if the data is missing, it's just not in the registry. So that would be a sort of a concern. I mean, it's not a concern to impact the rating, but
denominator in a sense, not missing.
Sort of, I mean, if the data are missing, they just don't include it. So
missing cases.
Yeah.
And even then, this is beyond. With regard to missing data, it actually, I think they reported to be extremely low.
Right.
Well, it's low if it's in the registry. I don't know if they reported it, like how many cases they don't even put in the registry. But it's not a big deal. I just.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Mean we're ready to vote?
Yeah, I think so. This is Karen from NQF. Just the only thing that I would add to May's very nice description of this is face validity is definitely acceptable because it's a new measure, but you have to agree that the results are adequate. So it's not just that they did it, but that they're, you know, the results were good enough to satisfy you. So I'm assuming that's the case, but I did want to just be very explicit about that.
So just another quick confirmation. Do you want to discuss reliability, or is everybody okay with their preliminary rating? Nobody seems to have any issues with their reliability testing. Okay, so we will take that as a nobody has issues. You do not need to vote on reliability. Please just vote on validity. I think.
There is a vote requested on 2A reliability.
So that is, excuse me, you do not need to cast a vote for reliability. You should be able to just cast your vote for validity and still submit the survey.
All right, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. If nobody else wants to discuss anything about 3309, please cast your votes, and then we can also move on to the next measure, which is 0964.
I'll turn it back. Question.
Oh, yeah.
I may be doing it wrong. This is Dave Sella, but when I cast my vote for the first one, it kicks me out of the survey and thanks me. Do I just re-enter, or can I back arrow?
You can re-enter the link by clicking that original hyperlink in the email.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Karen, did you want to start?
Yep. Okay, let's go ahead and start with 0964. So this is a maintenance measure that looks at therapy with aspirin, P2Y12 inhibitor, I don't know what that is, and a statin at discharge among patients who had a PCI. Now, this is a composite measure according to NQF's guidelines, and it is an all or none composite. So there was a little bit of question about whether this really is a composite. It's not a traditional one, but NQF does the all or none measures as composites. The data source is the CAFD PCI registry. Level of analysis is facility. This is not a risk-adjusted measure. And it uses a combination. This is a little different than maybe some measures that you're used to seeing. It uses a combination of exclusions from the denominator as well as exceptions in the numerator. So in terms of reliability, ratings were somewhat spread, 3 high, 1 moderate, 1 low. The low rating, we think, was due to disagreement about the appropriateness of the testing methods and some concerns about the specs. And with that, what we would do, since 4 of the 5 raters passed it, we will go through as either a high or moderate rating unless somebody wants to pull the reliability discussion to discuss. So in terms of what they did for reliability, they did do score level using the split sample methodology, And just a note that because it is a composite measure, we do require score level reliability, so they hit our requirements there in terms of what they did. There was some concern with the specifications, really, that had to do with the way the measures work. The second component is a subset of the denominator of the other two, so that actually brought some concern that the measure, and this is sort of a validity question, but that the measure is really impacted not only because of whether or not people got the medications, but just the frequency of PCI with or without stenting. One other thing that we noticed is that the testing data were limited to patients ages 65 and older, but this limitation was not included, at least that we saw in the specifications. So we probably just want to ask the developer to clarify that in the specifications. We could be harder on them and say your testing doesn't match the specs and therefore you need to retest, but more than likely that I imagine you wouldn't be interested in doing that. They use the split sample method, and that also was a little bit of a concern, I think, with a couple people. And they actually compared via Pearson correlation, so that's a little bit different than what we usually see. And we did note that the split sample methodology to date has been accepted both by NQF in the past as well as methods panel in this past year. And it's something that we've talked about in some of our monthly calls, and I think we'll probably still talk about that a little bit more as to whether at some point we want to actually require both of those or if we have a preference for one over the other. But again, precedent is that that is acceptable and that if that is provided, then signal-to-noise analysis wouldn't have to be. So that was reliability. Let me pause, see if anybody wants to, well, let me say it this way. If you have no objections, we will just pass it. But if you have objections and you want to do some discussion and a vote, then mention now.
On reliability.
On reliability, yeah. We will still definitely talk about validity. Okay, hearing none. Really, the trouble was with validity. So the votes ranged too high, one moderate, too low. And because of that split, we have to discuss and we have to vote. So the empirical testing was at the score level, and they basically did a construct validation comparing this measure to two 30-day mortality measures. And just to note, this is a composite measure, and it is a maintenance measure, which means that the score level testing this time around is required. So they did meet our requirements there. We note that they also mentioned some face validity assessments that they did. What they did really doesn't meet what we are looking for face validity, so the note there just is that don't really consider that when you're using the ratings. We really want you to consider the testing, the score level testing that's provided. Because this is, I want to open it up for discussion of validity in just a minute, but just to kind of complete the overall look at the measure, it is a composite measure. Because it's a composite measure, we have that extra criteria under four composite measures. And again, the consensus there was that it would pass with two high, two moderate, and just one low. And I think the what we put here in your discussion guide, just to remind you, are that when you're thinking about the composite questions for to rate these, we want to know do the component measures fit the quality construct and add value, and then do the aggregation and weighting rules, are they first of all consistent with the composite construct, and do they achieve the objective of simplicity and to the extent possible. So they computed hospital level results for the three components and basically correlated those to the overall composite scores. And we've provided those correlation results in the discussion guide for you, just to remind you. So on to the things that we absolutely have to discuss about validity. Again, they did construct validation, correlating their measures with two mortality measures. One was the STEMI shock mortality measure. The other was the no-shock mortality measure. The correlations were in the expected direction that the developers hypothesized, which was better provision of discharge medications they thought would be associated with lower mortality. The difficulty is that the correlations were quite low. The developer did provide a couple of ideas about why those correlations were a little bit low. There was also, in terms of threats to validity, there was some concern about whether this measure would actually be able to meaningfully differentiate between providers, and we've provided here the mean, median, and 25th percentile. At the 25th percentile, the composite rate is about almost 92%. So the question there really is, can it be used to differentiate providers? And I think I'll stop there. So I think most of your discussion will hinge around that low correlation, and is it too low to suit you? And then the question about meaningful differences. The measure is not topped out, but there might be not as much room as you might like, or it might be fine for you. And I'll just open it up for discussion.
Yeah, so this is Matt Austin. I was one of the folks who voted low on validity, specifically because of the concerns with the low correlations. It didn't seem like there was really a strong relationship between this measure and the two measures that they proposed. I mean, there is a slight correlation, and I guess I would welcome thoughts from my fellow panel members on why they think maybe that would be okay. I mean, I can be convinced. I guess I'd like some discussion about that and education maybe.
This is Lacey. I had the same sentiment as Matt. I'm in the same boat.
Yeah, this is... I'm sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead, please.
So this is Jeff. I think, so I was one of the high, and one of the reasons for that is I do think that there's sort of, you know, the method and the result. And there are very few of these submissions that attempt to do what this developer did, you know, which is to have a measure of the quality construct and look at the association of that construct with a material outcome. I mean, a lot of people do like correlations with related measures and things, which I don't consider to be as compelling. So I think I'm in part giving them sort of credit, you know, for doing validity the right way. Given the fact, you know, that they, as they say, there's a relatively low correlation. So I think just in terms of explanation, I'm giving them credit for their methodology and trying to signal, basically, you know, that you know, type of approach is what everyone should be doing.
Yeah,
this is John. David, go ahead, sorry.
Please go.
Well, this might be a little bit of a shift of conversation. I kind of along the lines of what Jeff said, I think that was Jeff that said, you know, I wouldn't be as concerned about the low correlations if the measure is actually potentially better than what it's being correlated with, because it would represent an improvement in the system. I was actually more drawn to the issue that the 25th percentile is already at 92%, and you know, the times that I've seen NQF retire measures, it's when performance gets so good that it's not really a helpful quality measure and doesn't differentiate because almost everyone's doing it. So Is there something, I noticed this last question, any advice for the developers on how to improve the submission for this cycle or a future cycle? Is there some way to build this measure out that would create more separation of providers? I don't know the area clinically, so I can't even speculate. I'm just wondering if, I mean, it seems like it's got potential in my mind, but maybe it would end up being sundowned within a couple of years of being implemented.
So this is Karen Kubeff, and sorry to interrupt you. I just wanted to make sure that you guys are aware we do have another criterion called opportunity for improvement. That criterion, which is considered by the standing committee, will be talking about that as well. And, you know, is it topped out? You know, is there still room for improvement? That sort of thing. But it also comes up under validity of the measure. We didn't put the details in the discussion guide. But I think the developers did show some stratified results, which is another way to maybe think about, you know, that opportunity for improvement and how much difference there is. And perhaps one of the things that in a future submission, should you guys go ahead and push it through, a future submission might be showing those distributional statistics for the various subgroups if they didn't do it. And apologies, we didn't write them down here. There might be a little bit of room in there that we're not seeing just by seeing these overarching numbers.
Yeah, well, in a sense, what I'm hearing, Karen, is that maybe we don't worry about that because the parent committee they'll be considering opportunity for improvement, and so we don't need to, unless we consider that to be a major validity issue, we could let it pass on that particular metric.
I think that's what I'm kind of hinting at, yes.
Here you go. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
And
I will kind of take it back to the composite thing, which you guys did say you felt the composite was okay. You know, one of the things that we hope that you looked at when you thought about the composite is, you know, is any one of those components kind of pushing things up? You know, is there too many components in there? Yeah, and I don't remember what the numbers were split out, so may not be. But that question is actually considered under the composite criterion. But we can certainly, if you guys do decide to go ahead and pass the measure, we would certainly note for the committee that you know, the higher percentages or the higher rates was a concern, you know, even though you passed it forward.
So this is Matt. Jeff, I appreciate your comments about the testing methods that the measure developer used, and I would agree this is exactly what we want others to be doing, so I completely agree with you there. It's just when it's not very far from zero, it feels like, what does that really tell me about this measure? That's the only thing, Matt. And I agree, I'm not sure one would expect necessarily a great relationship between a process measure and this outcome measures or outcome measures that they chose. So a little bit of my hesitation was, did they really choose the right measures to compare against?
Yeah, that would be good feedback as well. You know,
yeah.
The more proximate outcomes that they could use in their validation.
Okay.
Yeah.
Any other discussion along these lines or anything else that came up? Do you feel ready to vote on validity?
So I have a question. This is Bijan. What is the accepted norm in terms of the correlation coefficient for the components with the composite? So I, if, you know, I, the for P2Y, 12, it is 0.59. I guess the question is, I mean, what is the threshold?
Yeah, well, that's a good question. NQF doesn't have any thresholds. And apologies, I haven't looked at this measure in a couple of days. I think probably what this correlation is telling you is that the statin component is really, really highly correlated with the results of the outcome or the composite as a whole. Often when you have correlations that aren't as high, the argument is that they're related, so they kind of belong there, but they're not, you know, completely driving things. But I wouldn't go so far as to say, and maybe somebody else could help us on the call, is that 0.95 telling us that the statin component isn't needed or it's kind of superfluous? That I don't know the answer to. And Jeff might know. Jeff, you do a lot of composites, right?
Yeah, in general, I find those types of, you know, kind of item correlations, you know, difficult to interpret in that way, because on the one hand, because I'm not sure it really answers the right question. So, you know, to my mind, there are sort of two sort of fundamental questions that a composite sort of needs to address. I mean, the presumption is that relative to just the individual measures, the composite sort of adds new information, you know, that the individual measures don't. So that's sort of a concept of kind of competing importance. You know, you could have one provider that was high on one and another provider that was low on the other, and how are you supposed to make a decision in that context? And a composite could potentially inform that type of decision making, make a more rational decision than someone could just on their own. And then the other sort of theoretical sort of rationale for composite is uncertain component, uncertain importance when you don't know at the time you're making a decision which of those component measures is the most important. And so it's based on kind of the probability that, you know, that it will become important in the context. And I have a hard time sort of taking those sort of cell level correlations and associating them with either of those rationales. You know, this is an all or none, right? Sort of composite.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I tend to, from an evaluation perspective, it just makes more sense to me to treat it as if it were a process measure, you know, with some Boolean logic in the numerator.
Mm-hmm.
Because that, to me, then that just makes sense. It's just a process measure, and you evaluate it like you would any other process measure.
It was a point of great discussion back when we decided that all or none would be considered as composite. So
yeah, I think one thing I suggested that maybe would be more useful than these kind of correlation tables is just, you know, just to give me like what's the, especially if they have these kind of outcomes data, you know, what's the outcome in each of the 9 cells?
Mm-hmm.
The actual frequencies if you aggregated to the facility level.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Well, I think we've hit lots of things on this measure, and we've talked a lot about validity. If I'll give you about 2 seconds to chime in. If not, I'm going to ask you to vote on validity. So clearing throat doesn't count as chiming in. So go ahead and vote on validity, and we'll move to the next measure.
All right. Well, thank you for that. So Winham and I will be talking about measure 2936, admissions and emergency department visits for patients receiving outpatient chemotherapy. I think the biggest confusion about this measure was if it's a new or a maintenance measure. This is a new measure. However, it has come through the endorsement process before. It has not been seen by the methods panel, but it was reviewed by the Cancer Standing Committee in 2006. However, at that time, it did not pass on reliability and thus was not endorsed. And so when we're reviewing this measure, we should really review it as a new measure. So this measure estimates hospital-level risk-adjusted rates of inpatient admissions or ED visits for cancer patients 18 or older for at least one of 10 conditions within 30 days of hospital-based outpatient chemotherapy treatment. So the rates of admission and ED visits are calculated and reported separately. I do want to bring up there were some comments about, you know, why are these one measure, maybe it should be two measures, maybe they should be evaluated separately. This is something that came up during the standing committee discussion the last time it was reviewed, and both the developer and the standing committee agreed with a greater majority that it was better to just leave it as one measure. And so that's why it's now come back forth as one measure. This is an outcome measure based on claims and enrollment data at the facility level, and it is risk adjusted. So in terms of reliability, this measure did pass with a moderate rating. We had one high and four moderates. There were some concerns about low reliability in non-cancer hospitals. There was score level reliability done in two ways, signal and noise and a split level ICC. The results there are listed for you. So I'll pause real quick since there was a pretty big majority that agreed that the reliability testing was appropriate now. I'll ask, does anyone want to pull it for discussion? Okay. And you can always pull it later if I'm going too quickly, but I'm going to assume that we're good to go with reliability and we can focus on validity. So in terms of validity, we did have a split decision, two moderate, two low, one insufficient. However, much like our earlier discussion, I think this may be partly because there was some confusion about if this is a new or maintenance measure. For new measures, we do accept face validity as the method for validity, and empirical testing is not required. In terms of the face validity provided for validity, there were some concerns about not all of the things that's listed under face validity counting as face validity, and that's true. With NQF's requirements, only the mention of the 28 expert work group meets our requirements. All the other attempts and groups that they had review the measures don't really count because they're more about the process of developing the measure and not actually evaluating if they think it's appropriate. However, the 28X or work group does meet our requirements. Also, with that, there was some mention of the eight respondents, there were a couple that were involved in the development. However, NQF does not have a requirement that they use a completely independent test. So that's actually fine for them to be using those people that were part of the development. Other than the actual discussion about method of testing, there were some concerns about risk adjustment brought up, about is concurrent radiology a risk factor present at the start of care, and is there any potential for complications from radiology with complications from chemotherapy. The developer does state that concurrent radiotherapy is defined as having a radiotherapy procedure present on the same claim as the first index chemotherapy case or on a separate claim within 14 days prior to the first index chemotherapy case. With that, the only note that we'll add is that the inclusion or lack of specific risk factors should not be a reason to reject a measure, although concerns can be raised to go to the standing committee who can then decide that it should go down for that factor. But at the methods panel level, it wouldn't be appropriate to drop the measure for that. And then again, there's some mentions about the two rates being combined into one measure. And again, the methods panel can state that they think that's not appropriately done, but if they feel that they provide extensive analysis and discussion about the consideration of the social risk factors, and the standing committee has stated that they feel it's appropriate for the measures to be one, it's really up to the methods panel to decide how they want to move forward with that information. And lastly, there were some concerns about meaningful differences, and we have listed the numbers here for you. So with that, I will open it up for discussion to see what are some thoughts on validity for this measure.
Go ahead.
All I was going to say was I think I was, you know, I had raised the concern about that some or all of their expert panel that they had reviewed the measure for face validity had been involved with the development of the measure. And I can appreciate that NQF doesn't have specific rules around that, and so I'm happy to accommodate that. I think that might be something that NQF might want to think about for the future. It just feels like there's a strong conflict there. If you're part of the team developing the measure, I'm not sure you can really independently assess whether or not it's a useful measure for quality and safety. So that's just my two cents.
So this is Karen from NQF, and just FYI, a few years ago we did try to add that to our guidance and criteria that the TEP evaluating face validity would have to be separate, and we got a lot of pushback from measure developers, I think particularly in some cases where the clinical expertise is limited to a fairly small number of people. So their argument was that, hey, we've got the greatest people to help us develop it, but there's not enough people to go out and find independent groups to evaluate it. So that was the argument, and again, I think that was probably back in 2013 or so. It's been a little while. So we could certainly reconsider it and see if that, you know, if it's time to be a little bit more stringent on it, but we have tried it in the past.
So this is Dave Sella. Karen, so to the group, to the team, I was co-chair of the cancer committee that reviewed this a couple of years ago. So that's a disclosure. And my question to you, Karen, is that is it okay for me to mention that some aspects of that discussion in this context, or would you rather keep that separate?
No, I think you are perfectly free to add those in.
Yep. Okay. So on face validity, correct me if my recall is wrong, Karen, but my recall is that the committee had no problem with face validity. It's, you know, I think it's a pretty common shared view across oncology that keeping people out of the emergency room and out of the hospital is a good thing. There was a lot of discussion about why they're combined and not separated, and actually it expanded beyond that because, you know, there are so many different models of care now that it's possible not only to avoid hospitalization by treating in an emergency room with 23-hour stays or to avoid emergency room care in certain places by having urgent care, which may not reflect the patient, you know, your patient pool being any healthier. You're just coding them as urgent care. So those are some of the concerns. So I don't think the committee was concerned about combining, combining ED and hospitalization, but actually that there are still other models of care that would allow you to bypass coding something as ED or hospitalization in patients who otherwise are similarly sick. So did they address that at all here?
I don't recall that being addressed when I looked at these, Dave. I don't know if other panelists noticed. And I will kind of an NQF caveat, too. Sometimes it gets tricky. Our numbering system isn't as pristine as we would like, and over the years, we actually have allowed these kinds of what we kind of now internally call multi-rate measures to go through. You're used to them very much when you see a CAPS measure or something like that where there's, you know, 11 different measures all under one NQF ID. In this case, they really are, and we do consider them two separate measures, so we expect testing, et cetera, specifications, all those things to be laid out and separated out, which I think they've done in this case. So it's under one NQF number, but it really is two measures.
Right. Yeah. Thank you for that. That's important. So I guess I just wanted to, you know, comment that certainly in terms of face validity, that there is the independent record of the cancer committee, the NQF committee, that didn't have any conflict on it as endorsing the face validity.
Yeah, thank you. And this is Matt again. I hear that. I guess I just am raising the concern about conflicts, and I would just push back and say face validity is one option that they're given on how they would demonstrate validity. And it's obviously in some ways sort of the easiest, but there are other options that are available as well.
Yeah.
But it's helpful to hear that NQF doesn't have specific criteria around that, and that this conversation has been brought up before and people have been comfortable with having a different viewpoint. That's helpful. Thank you.
So this is Karen again, just a couple things. If you guys do decide to pass the measure, you know, from your end and it actually goes through on the standing committee end, when they bring it back in 3 years for re-endorsement, at that time they would be expected to provide empirical validity. That's one thing that we have changed actually in the last couple years is that face validity we will allow for new measures, but the time of maintenance, we really would like to see empirical testing. And Dave, to go back to your comment, it sounds like that you would suggest that developers consider other forms of care that might also be added to at some point this measure. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, but I don't take it as on the, you know, in itself a knock against validity. I'm not arguing validity yet,
right.
But that did come up, and you know, was a concern expressed. I'm sure the committee will be wrestling with that again.
Yep.
Okay. Were there any other concerns or topics that people want to bring about validity? Otherwise, we can go ahead and vote. Okay, so please go ahead and put your vote only for validity for 2936, and then we'll move on to our next measure, which I think is back to Karen.
Just to let you know, this is Mike Stoto. I'm finally joining. I'm sorry I was late. I won't vote on anything up until now.
Thank you, Mike. That's great. Glad you could make it. Okay, so we are now ready to go to measure 3478, surgical treatment complications for localized prostate cancer. This is a new measure, and it's basically, it's an interesting measure. It is using claims to look at kind of pre-surgery versus post-surgery urinary incontinence and erectile dysfunction amongst patients who have localized prostate cancer surgery. And they build this to where the outcomes are rescaled to a 0 to 100 scale. We think that this measure is meant to be stratified by, let me try this word, prostatectomy type. I think that's surgery type. So we would expect some results split out by the stratification there. And the measure specifications are suggesting that the measure be limited to facilities who have at least 10 patients attributed. So the level of analysis is facility. This measure is not risk adjusted. And in terms of the ratings for reliability and validity, there was actually splits on both reliability and validity. Reliability was tilting a little more towards the low side. Concerns had to do with specifications and the testing methodology. And for validity, there was a split tilting a little bit more towards the PATH side. In terms of what they did a little bit of data element validation and a face validity assessment, which again is, because this is a new measure, that would conform to our minimum requirements, but there was also some concerns about exclusions and lack of risk adjustments. So with that, since we definitely have to discuss both, we'll talk about reliability first. In terms of specifications, there was some uncertainty about the truncation and rescaling and how that was actually done. So that wasn't kind of brought out in the submission. And the other question that came up, and it actually comes up, I think, both under specifications and reliability, validity, is just a curiosity factor about how many hospitals aren't actually eligible for the measure since they have a volume, a minimum volume provided. And that was information that they didn't tell us. In terms of this testing that they did, this was the split sample methodology, again, comparison via a Pearson correlation, which was, it came out to 0.65. Again, just a reminder, I think I've already said this today, that the split sample methodology has been accepted in the past on its own by NQF and the methods panel. The developer this time didn't really tell us much in terms of how they split the sample. We know it was a random split, but the details were a little bit lacking there. Again, it seems like this is meant to be reported separately by open versus not open surgery. A question for you as a methods panel would be, do we need to see reliability results split out by surgery type, or having them all together in one analysis, is that okay? So what I'd like to do is stop there and let you guys talk about reliability first before we proceed on to validity.
Just a quick comment on the split sample thing. So I think that's just obviously an issue that we need to address, because I'm definitely in the camp that it's not telling us what we want to know with respect to reliability. But I understand what you're saying about the fact that it's been accepted in the past and as an acceptable method.
Yes, and this is Karen. We will definitely be talking about that again in the next few months.
This is Mike. I've got another issue. My understanding is that when they had 10 patients or fewer, then not surprisingly, that they have reliability problems. Is this intended only for bigger hospitals than that, or would it be used for small hospitals too, of which there seem to be many in the database?
So the idea is that a hospital that had at least 10 patients that fit their denominator criteria, this measure could be used for those hospitals. But if they only had 9 or 8 or something along those lines, then it should not be used by those hospitals.
Yeah, but I even for 10, it seemed to be pretty much of an issue. You know, they I'm looking at my notes here. They say for at least 40 patients, they have a correlation of 0.85, but then it's only 0.65 for hospitals with at least 10 patients. And there seem to be a lot of those.
So what do other panelists think? Correlation is getting pretty high with 40 or more. Somewhat low with 10 or more. I will tell you, yesterday? I'm already getting mixed up on when we had our subgroup 2 call. The discussion did come up a little bit about the split sample methodology versus the signal-to-noise methodology, and I think the consensus from the methods panel, or at least there wasn't really pushback from it, the consensus was that number that would come from a split sample should be regarded as a conservative number, almost maybe a lower bound. Again, that was a statement made by the developer for one of the measures that was considered by subgroup 2. But the group did talk about it and, again, seemed to kind of accept that thinking. So I don't know if that will help you in your thinking today or not, but I did want to share that.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
I've got it on my list for additional monthly calls, so it's definitely something that we want to tackle.
Can you sort of repeat again the issue you raised about the fact that there's sort of open and closed and I guess I didn't completely catch that. They're reporting two different rates?
Yeah, I mean, this is not this is Karen again from NQF. This the way that they've stated in their submission, it sounds like that they would report this out for open surgeries versus closed surgeries. So even though they didn't say, hey, this is two separate measures under one NQF ID, in reality, if they're going to compute them separately and report them separately, then that's what you have. So my question for you is, knowing that they would plan to do that, do you feel like you would need to see those reliability numbers for the open surgeries versus the closed surgeries?
I would say yes, if that's how it's going to be reported.
Yeah, this is Bijan. I agree. If they intend to do that, like report it by open versus a robotic or non-open, then probably that's how it should be reported as well.
And this is Matt, I would agree. I didn't catch that in the stratification section. I sort of glanced over that.
Now, it would be really helpful if, I don't know if any of you have your measure information sheet open, if somebody could definitely confirm that that was the intent of the measure. And I'll try to open it as well. We don't want to...
Yeah, it's section S10 on page 5. It says each hospital's performance score should be reported for this measure and serve as the basis for national comparison and accountability. However, each hospital's performance should be reported stratified by prostatectomy type, open versus not, to add meaning for consumers and for hospital quality improvement.
So it does sound like from that statement that in terms of accountability and public reporting, they would plan on splitting them out. For internal QI, I don't think we would be as concerned.
Yeah, I mean, they are slightly different populations. And as I understand it, may reflect some different degree of disease or have disease differences. So one might actually see differences in urinary incontinence and erectile dysfunction. Feature types, as I understand it. So yeah.
I guess one of the things that you might want to think about doing is, you know, if you're pretty happy with those reliability results as a whole, but you're concerned about the stratification, you could forward that on to the standing committee to decide. It's kind of up to you where you would land on that.
So this is Matt. Let me pose a question to the group. So I voted this as moderate. You know, they did use the split sample approach, which NQF has deemed as okay, and there was a correlation of 0.65. What am I missing, or why would others not see that as moderate?
Bijan. I voted moderate too, and because of that's like it. I think as far as I understand, 0.65 is considered sort of fair. So again, I always get confused, or not only confused. I mean, I have no idea in terms of like, you know, what is the threshold, like, you know, what is the number that I should consider good, like, you know, in terms of the correlation coefficient.
Yeah, this is Jeff. I'm intending to go from a low to a moderate for that reason.
Okay.
But I know I actually agree the fact that this is, again, I didn't catch it earlier. So if they are intending to report it for separately for open versus robotic, I think by definition, like, you know, we all know that the open surgery probably would have higher complications. And you would really would like to see the numbers stratified by open versus non-open.
Also, if they reported two different rates, each one presumably will have less reliability than the number together.
Is what they, yep.
And fewer hospitals will meet that 10 threshold. So.
10 is not especially good either.
Well, what I'm concerned about is that, you know, a hospital that may have had 25 will now have, 12 and 13, but those will be less reliable.
So, Matt, if the panel does want the developer to split it up between open and not open, does that influence our reliability vote, or is that just a note back to them, or...
I think it's a judgment call on your side. If you push it through as moderate, then that would be saying you're okay for now with kind of the grouped reliability and the results that you saw. But it sounds like at minimum you would want a very strong statement saying when it comes back, or perhaps even more close in time, we actually could say, hey, this is something that we'd like to see maybe in the year, and you could put that forward as a very strong desire on your part. So no hard and fast rule on this one. It kind of depends on are you willing to see it endorsed potentially with this number, or is that just a complete no-go for you?
This is Bijan. I would go for the latter option, current the one where you sort of, let them know that we would like to see the numbers stratified by open versus non-open in years' time.
Okay.
I agree with that.
That sounds like a reasonable ask for the rest of you. I mean,
I do want to comment that while the recommendation can be made and the standing committee can hold that recommendation, there's no hold. They don't necessarily have to come back with that information. They can do it during their ad hoc and then see it from there.
We've had precedent that things we've asked that they need to bring things back. So I think this one might be one that we could expect that they could do that for us. Or if you're willing to wait 3 years, I mean, that's okay, too. Okay, yeah, it's a tough question. So go ahead and vote however you would like to vote. And we will capture these comments in our summary.
This is Mike. Since I came in late, I don't know how to vote. Can someone?
Oh, yes. Miranda?
Sure.
Miranda's got a frog in her throat today, so she's going to hand it off to me.
So we sent you an email yesterday with the meeting materials, and at the very bottom of the email is a hyperlink to the SurveyMonkey link. So if you open that up and then click on this measure, which is 3478, you can vote then.
Okay.
Let us have any problems.
And we're just voting reliability, right, because I don't think we've talked about validity yet.
Correct. Okay, in terms of validity, there were some general concerns. We've already talked about the, not really knowing how many hospitals are going to be excluded from the measure. Having that would be interesting information. There was some question about the score being scaled from 0 to 100 and the comment that a hospital can seem to get worse simply because other hospitals get better. a question about how facilities would interpret this score when the rescaling is done at the patient level. We might, if that's something we really want to discuss, the person who made that comment might want to explain that a little bit more clearly so that everybody gets it. And then there was some additional desire for additional analysis or explanation around exclusions. In terms of the testing, I think it was unclear whether the face validity assessment actually met our requirements. Just to reiterate what our requirements are, we are actually looking for a systematic assessment that is transparent by identified experts, and we want it to explicitly address whether the performance scores from the measure can be used to distinguish between good and poor quality. And then we also want some discussion about, what was the rationale if the answer was in the negative. So for this one, it seemed unclear about the size and composition of the TEP. The questions that they asked weren't exactly what we say in our guidance materials. They did ask statements that they made where the performance measure succeeds in measuring what it was intended to measure, and the scores reflect information regarding the quality of prostate cancer surgery. That latter one may be especially very much close enough to what we are asking for that that you're fine with it. Results were, for the first question, a 4 out of 5, a 4.5, 7 out of 8 agreed or strongly agreed, with none disagreeing or strongly disagreeing. For the second question, the average was a little lower, 5 of 8 strongly agreed or agreed. And again, none disagreed or strongly disagreed. So when you're thinking about the face validity assessment, just, are the questions close enough to what we're asking? And, are the results reasonable, adequate enough for you? They did some data element testing. They actually looked at the cohort definitions, and what they did is compared it to the SEER database and kind of verified that they were able to find the right cohort for the denominator. In doing this comparison with the SEER database, which they consider the gold standard, they didn't compare other critical other data elements. And just a reminder that when data element validation is done, NQF would like to see all the critical data elements looked at. So in this case, they didn't look at all of them. But again, this is a new measure. So, not looking at the critical data elements, all of them, would have been a fatal flaw potentially for a non-new measure. But with a new measure, the fact that they did in a face validity assessment could push them over the passing edge. There was also, I think, a little bit of concern about the lack of risk adjustment. That wasn't really brought out very heavily in the comments, but the developers did spend some time talking about why they chose not to adjust. So with that, let me stop, see if anybody first has any questions on things that I mentioned, and then we'll just talk about it.
Well, this is Dave. I'm concerned that, erectile dysfunction and incontinence are not, they're graded. Graded on a level of severity, and this conversion to 0 to 100, I think it's not clear to me that it's valid just as at the element level. And I don't know, risk adjustment seems pretty important here, especially if some of these men are also going to be getting radiation or hormone therapy.
Okay. This is Matt. My understanding with the risk adjustment, and I could be incorrect in this, was that they actually did look at it both ways and then did a correlation between the two and found that to be 0.95. So my understanding was they were sort of coming to the conclusion that the risk adjustment didn't really change performance results. And
right. That's right. I just have a hard time buying it, I guess.
Right, and maybe, and I didn't necessarily assess their risk adjustment model and whether it included all appropriate and relevant risk factors, right? So if it was an undeveloped model, then perhaps that could be a reason.
So I think in terms, just to give you a little bit of guidance in terms of measures that maybe you have to at least consider risk adjustment, what we ask developers to do is if they decide they're not going to, they need to make the case as to why they chose not to. So in terms of your decision there, you're basically, we're asking, you know, do you accept their justification, as Matt said, their correlation analysis, is that enough to convince you that risk adjustment probably wasn't that necessary? That's how you would approach that number. In terms of the 0 to 100 scale, I have to say I didn't quite understand what they were doing, so I don't know, Dave, if you could even, can you explain? Do you?
I can't. They're doing. I'm just very skeptical. I'd rather have it be much more explicit about what they're getting from the patient in terms of their report. I think it's, you know, if these issue charts, if they're documented, then they have some conversion. I don't understand it either.
Is it because different people will have different numbers of claims? And to make it fair to compare, I mean, I don't know. I'm asking. I don't understand.
One of my issues was that they sort of interpret this as being the mean difference in days. I mean, that's sort of their interpretation of it, although the score essentially eliminates that interpretation. And the rescaling is done at the patient level, so I don't know how they can refer to it as a mean. You know, it's not actually a mean of the difference in days. It's a mean of the score, which is, you know, rescaled in some unknown way. And it just wasn't clear how they were even calculating claim days.
I mean, it's a really good idea, performance measure. I just can't see how it's going to generate any confidence that we're really getting at the proportion of people that have, you know, clinically significant incontinence or erectile dysfunction. The numbers will be higher than what's reported. It's hard to know how much higher.
So this one is tricky, too. So it sounds like at minimum, whether it goes through or doesn't go through from you guys, having some additional clarity at some point on the scaling methodology and how that works is something that you would like to see. It also sounds like there's a little bit of hesitation just in terms of the clinical side of things that, you know, if you guys do go ahead and pass it through, we would want to ask these clinical, make sure that the standing committee hits those clinical questions.
Yeah, I think that I was going to make a point along those lines too. To some degree, we're thinking about this from the clinical term as opposed to the statistical approach. And I'm not sure. I know that I'm not capable of thinking about that without knowing, having substantive knowledge.
And, you know, that's extremely fair. We don't, you know, we want to make sure that the standing committee is able to put some of these questions in context. So it might be that in terms of what you're looking for, you'd really want to be looking at, you know, just the face validity assessment that they did. Is that adequate for what you'd be looking for? The cohort identification seemed to work pretty well. So regardless of the fact that they didn't look at all the clinical variables, the cohort definition did work, which was a major question that they asked. And they did provide at least some rationale as to why they did not risk adjust. And that kind of leaves the clinical question about should, you know, are there other things that they should have considered? Would be something that maybe the standing committee could weigh in on. Is there anything else you guys wanted to talk about on this measure? The tough one, actually.
I do think one thing that would be helpful is if they could just even provide like a table, you know. So, I mean, I think they start off with a fairly simple concept, and then they really make it complicated. And so, not, you know, don't do that. Or if you're gonna do it, you know, just make it easier to map it out, you know. So, I don't know how their panel could answer the question without knowing, you know, does a score from, you know, 90 to 92, what does that mean in terms of days? You know, what's the mapping, you know, between their reasonable, you know, construct and this score they've created.
Okay. We're writing this down.
Yeah, I second that. This is Dave.
And this is Matt. The one thing, I don't know if this is the right place to bring this up, but I do have some concerns with them excluding patients who die within a year of your prostatectomy. That's a little bit of a potential survival or survivor bias that's introduced.
Sounds like the well has dried up on discussion on this one, so a lot to consider. I'm going to go ahead and ask you to cast your vote on validity for this measure, and we'll give you a minute or two to do that.
What are we doing? We've got a half hour left. We've done five with three to go. Is that right, or have we done four?
We've done four, so that actually is about what I expected. So in terms of what I was expecting, we're a little bit ahead of time. I kind of doubt we'll get through all four of them, and that's okay. That's why we set up a second call. So let's go ahead to 2561, and for this one, Ashley is going to walk us through. So Ashley, are you there and ready to take on 2561?
Yep, I'm ready. And Karen, I have to say I'm going to be optimistic about this. There's four measures left. If you want to look at it as kind of two sets of two, the first two measures are very similar with similar issues. And I think, you know, maybe if we get through the first one with some good discussion, we can talk about how the second one may be similar or different, and we'll need you to vote, you know, distinctively on each measure, but I think we may have a little bit of time savings given that we have similarities in these two sets of measures. So I'm still hopeful we can do it. We'll do our best. So the first measure that we're going to look at is 2561, which is SCS aortic valve replacement composite score. It is a maintenance measure, and it's in their first kind of line of the description, they describe it as two domains consisting of six measures, but I think the easiest way to think about it is two domains, one of which is 30-day mortality, and the other of major morbidity, which that component has five, within it, five adverse outcomes that they're looking for that are kind of the absence of or the presence of within the within each domain, which within each of those five domains in that element. So it is calculated as a weighted average of the two domain estimates, where the weights are inversely proportional to the standard deviation of the domain-specific scores across hospitals. There were, I'm going to stick to where I was going to veer off here, but we'll stay here. The measured time frame is 3 years, and facilities and groups are excluded from the measure if they have less than 10 AVR procedures in the patient population. So this measure relies on the registry data from the SCS Adult Cardiac Surgery Database. It's specified as a level of analysis at the clinician group level and the facility level. For reliability, the panel passed this measure potentially, basically with a moderate rating. There were five moderates, and I'll go over some of the things within this reliability element, but we don't necessarily have to discuss this in detail if everyone's okay with their ratings, unless someone wants to pull it. So in terms of reliability, there were it says here the specifications were included in the submission. They did provide a link to an external PDF document that describes their specifications, but it's not actually in the measure information form. So hopefully you guys were able to locate that. We'll work with them to make sure that the specifications can actually get in the measure information form. In terms of reliability testing, they did score level testing using signal to noise ratio, and we've listed the results here. They have divided them up among participants with 50 or more operations and 100 or more operations. So the posterior mean of reliability across all of them was 0.49. And the posterior median lower and upper boundaries of 95% credible intervals was 0.49 with a range of 0.44 and 0.54. For participants with 50 or more operations, the reliability score was 0.59. And for participants with 100 or more operations, the reliability score was 0.69. A note for the panel that NQF requires that for each level of analysis that they've specified in the measure, they should provide corresponding testing. And that, based on how they have described their testing, it's not exactly clear which of their results correspond to each, so that's something that we will need to follow up with them on in terms of clarifying their submission to make sure that either that they need to better label their testing or divide it up or provide additional testing that corresponds to whatever is missing. So I'm going to pause there and see if anyone has any additional comments or issues about reliability that would like to be discussed. Again, it did pass with five moderates, but I just wanted to open that up for discussion.
So are you saying that even if we just go ahead and say that, you know, five moderates is passes, kind of gets in, you're still going to require some additional testing?
Potentially, yes. If it passes on validity and the measure gets through the methods panel, we would then we would follow them with the input from the panel anyway, but yes, there would be additional information that would or clarifications that would be needed from them in order for this to go forward to the committee.
Okay.
Oh, okay. Hearing nothing on reliability, let's move on to validity. I did also want to make a point just of consistency because this measure is very similar to the measure that we'll be discussing next, to just kind of keep that in mind as, you know, we vote here potentially and then vote on the next measure, that if there are reasons that, you know, your votes are different between the two measures, given the, you know, nuances between them and that supports your differences, that's fine. But where there should be consistencies, I just wanted to point that out, that we should try to be consistent as possible across the two measures, especially given that the issues with validity that were identified were essentially the same for the two measures. So with that said, I'll go ahead and move into validity. The votes were for 3 high and 2 low. And again, this puts us at that kind of 3 out of 5 split, which is right on the cusp of what we consider consensus. The measure score validity was assessed using face validity of the composite, content validity of the components, and predictive validity to show stability over time of the composite. Most of the concerns from the panel members were around the appropriateness of the predictive validity method. And we'll come back to that in just a second, but also there were some concerns around the approach to determine the inclusion of SDS factors in the risk adjustment model. This was primarily around the concern of them including race, which they describe using it as a clinical factor, which has some relationship with genetics and the expression of disease in some racial groups more than others. Also concerns regarding meaningful differences, and we'll come back to that as well. And then again, this note about the level of analysis, which we've already discussed. So let's pause there, and I'll just highlight a couple of the issues with validity that came up, and then open it up for discussion. With the face validity assessment that they provided, we've talked about this a little bit already, but their description of face validity doesn't quite meet NQF requirements on what is needed in terms of providing some sort of results or other description specifics about how the experts rated or determined that the measure score, what they were performing, distinguished good from poor quality. That said, they did provide other types of validity testing, which should be the focus. So they describe a predictive validity assessment, which examined the stability of star ratings over a three-year period. And they have divided the performance of the participants in their sample, classify them as 1, 2, and 3 star participants based on their scores. The greatest stability was found among those with 2 star ratings. This was also the group that had the most participants in that group, and so there was some concern over whether or not that would actually be expected, given that, you know, that was the largest group or aggregation of performance within that 2 star rating group. With the predictive validity assessment, they compared the components of the composite they compared the components of the deposit to morbidity and mortality rates within each of the star-rated groups. So I will pause there and open it up for discussion on validity.
So this is Matt first. I'm the ones who raised the concern about their predictive validity. And my concern is that with 90% of hospitals being classified as two stars, one shouldn't be greatly surprised that in the next round, a very, very high number of them are still classified as two stars. And so I don't know what I'm proposing as an alternative, but what they've done feels a little short of what I would expect, because I feel like it's sort of the expected result, given how they classify hospitals. But I welcome pushback and feedback on that thought.
Well, that makes does it taint the measure? I mean, that totally makes sense, Matt. I mean, you're gonna, if it's 95% base rate, you're gonna have high stability. But does that really taint the validity of the measure, in your opinion?
It doesn't taint the validity of the measure, but from that, I'm not sure that they demonstrated sort of the validity that they were hoping to demonstrate.
Well, this is Mike. I guess I thought that the real validity test was there's a graph, you know, that shows adjusted morbidity and mortality within the 1, 2, and 3 star groups. This is just above 2B 1.4 on page, I don't know what page it is. I think that's the relevant comparison, isn't it? That the morbidity and the mortality are so different between the 1, 2, and 3 star groups?
Yeah, let me look at that right now. I may have...
Those aren't independent, though, are they? I mean, aren't they just showing that they constructed the composite by?
I got the impression that the stars were were constructed on other grounds than the morbidity, and than the measure. Maybe that's not it's not totally clear about that, but that's the impression.
This is what the sentence is, that the composite scores have higher performance on each individual domain. So what they're doing is they're showing that when the composite is higher, the component measures are higher, which again doesn't really seem to be about validity. And a measure is persistent; it could be, you know, persistently biased. I mean, you know, it doesn't basically say anything about validity.
Jeff, this is Matt. Are you saying that a stronger comparison would be if they had compared their measure to a independent measure as opposed to measures that actually comprise their measure?
Right, yeah.
This is Mike again. I did look at it, and I think that I was wrong and that you guys are right, that the stars are based on the measure. So that your concern is valid.
Yeah.
I mean, eventually,
so,
I'd like to see us sort of progress towards, you know, it's almost like a maturity level with these kind of validity studies. I mean, to me, the lowest level of kind of validity study is to say there's some sort of implicit quality construct. We can't measure it. We just sort of suggest that it's there. And that could be, you know, because it's consistent over time or there's some variability across measured entities, you know, and outcomes. So we're going to sort of assume it's there. It's kind of an implicit argument. The second kind of, so that's, to me, that's like the lowest of the low. I mean, it's something, but it's low. Our more moderate level would be to say, we still can't measure the implicit construct, but we can create the construct and we can associate it with some material outcome. And that's kind of what some of the ones did earlier, you know, but you can imagine, you know, you have a composite. You could actually you could actually construct the composite construct and use that as a variable and look at its correlations with some sort of independent outcome or maybe an independent process measure. And then the highest level of kind of validity testing is when you actually have a direct measure of the quality construct, or at least, you know, most of it, and then you look at the association between that and an independent outcome or maybe a related process. But to me, this is, of those three levels, this is at the lowest of those three.
Well, it's a maintenance measure, so the bar has to be higher than the lowest of the low, right?
Yeah, I'll just add, this is Ashley again, that looking at their submission from last endorsement period, it looks like it was a new measure in the last review, and so they just submitted face validity.
It has face validity.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and this is Matt. I mean, I actually, my experience with STS is they do a stellar job and develop great measures, but if I'm having to assess it based on what they provided, I feel like it doesn't quite meet what has been asked of them.
So I think, was it, forgive me if it was Jeff that was saying that this is the lowest of the low, I guess, of what you would expect to see. I guess the question for everyone would be, even though it's the lowest, is that good enough? And, you know, maybe consider that and as you consider what you might make your final vote.
I mean, this is Dave, speak for myself. I hear the troubling, you know, the trouble, but I guess I'm willing personally for this to go to, you know, the parent committee or whatever we call the deciding committee for them to deliberate. It's a tough call, though, and this is, like you say, this is going to be carry over to the next one.
Does anyone have anything else to add, or do you guys feel ready to cast your vote at this point?
Just a process. Sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, just to put it back into play for you, it does have face validity, but since it's a maintenance measure, you have to look beyond that. So it's exactly what Ashley had suggested. Is this graph that they did, does that actually demonstrate validity to you empirically?
If we vote it low, then what's the... what's the result of that? It doesn't go forward, or?
That's correct. So if a majority of you vote low or insufficient, perhaps might be the better way if you think that the testing that they've done is not enough for you, then it would go back to the developer. And with your comments, and hopefully they would do some additional testing and bring it back.
So this is Bijan, actually. That's what my question was. So if we were to ding it, what is the specific test that we would like to ask them as the developers?
So that would be maybe under the question at the end of each of the summaries that we provided you under the feedback to developer. That question, I think there was a couple suggestions in there about when he provided the kind of low, moderate, high examples of what might be expected, but if you have any more specifics around that, that would certainly be helpful for us and for the developer.
Well, what I'm thinking right now is sort of like, you know, this point earlier about sort of method and results. You know, so it seems like, you know, in that context, low ought to mean, you know, invalid, right? Like we have concerns that this measure is not valid and it shouldn't go forward. And I think that's not quite what we're saying. I think what we're saying is they just didn't demonstrate validity, you know, using the method.
That would be insufficient.
It would be insufficient.
You can vote insufficient.
Yeah. But they, like, what I'm struggling with is I think they did face validity. They did some empirical validity testing.
Yeah.
You know, what I'm contemplating is kind of what you were saying before, is maybe that what that means is moderate and it should go to the committee and with, you know, a bunch of caveats.
Yeah.
Rather than pushing it to the curb, you know.
Yeah, so with the insufficient one, as you mentioned, it would basically, what you would say is that you don't have the information you need to really determine if this measure is valid. And that seemed a little bit of what you were saying earlier. But if you feel that you can kind of, based on the method they used, while it's not your favorite, it is something you can use, and the results were, in most considerations, good enough to indicate the measure was valid, then a moderate rating would be seen more appropriate. And then obviously you can list your concerns and we'll incorporate anything that's already been mentioned, and then the standing committee can decide, well, is this really, you know, good enough to keep going? So those are kind of the different routes you could go based on how you're feeling about the information.
Are you guys feeling like you're ready to vote now on that measure? Could we ask you to kind of pull up the SurveyMonkey for this measure and 2561 and cast a vote based on Poonam's guidance there on the insufficient versus the moderate?
So it seems like if our inclination is, you know, with some amount of trepidation to move this forward to the review committee, it would be moderate, would be the vote. And if our inclination is to say, here's some specific information that we don't have and need, we should be clear about what that is and vote insufficient. And then we just see where the vote lands, huh?
I think that's an accurate characterization.
All right, let's see what we think.
And then
so everyone, all they should be voting now. Okay. And I'm going to move on to 2563. We've only got about 5 minutes. Like I said, this measure is very similar, and the concerns raised were basically identical. This measure is 2563. It includes both aortic valve replacement and CABG, coronary artery bypass graft. Composite score. The composite score is constructed in the same way as the prior measure, specified at the same level of analysis. Time frame is the same. Same exclusions with the patient population and participants. They performed the same tests. And again, on this measure, in terms of voting from the panel, it passed on reliability with one high and four moderate. And for validity, there was a split of three high and two low. And so, again, the same issues are bulleted out here that we discussed previously. So I guess with this measure, would just ask if anyone had anything that they thought was distinctively different. I don't think that there are necessarily, besides, you know, potentially the actual score and values that were, you know, identified with the testing. But let me just open it up for a discussion while we have a little bit of time left and see if there's anything different that folks would want to raise with this measure, and then see if you would be ready ready to vote.
I don't have anything. This is Dave.
Okay. So it doesn't sound like there's anything distinctively different in terms of their approach to demonstrate reliability and validity. So Karen, unless you have anything else to add, I'm going to ask that folks go ahead and vote on the validity for this measure, keeping in mind the similarities between this one and the prior measure to make sure we're being consistent.
Nope, I agree.
On just the validity or reliability and validity, both?
Just validity.
Why is that?
Because reliability.
Yes, it acts on reliability.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And so while you guys are doing that, I'm actually going to pause and hand it back over to Karen with the caveat that we did not quite make it through to the last two measures. The good news is that they're both very similar, and so similar to what we did with these two measures, I think the discussion, you know, there'll be a lot of carryover between the two measures, and hopefully won't take too long, but we will need to reconvene on the next call that is scheduled for this subgroup to get through all the measures. And I will go ahead and hand it over to Karen and the team to see if there's anything else to add in terms of next steps.
Thank you, Ashley. This is Karen. The only thing I would add is between now and our next call, which I'm sure the team will tell us, remind us when that will be, if you we'll give you one more chance on that next call to pull the other two if you want to. It's absolutely fine if you do not want to pull those last two measures, but we will give you one more chance on that second call. So Poonam or Miranda May, do we have anything else, or do we just want to give a goodbye and let everybody go?
I think we can just give a goodbye again. Our second call is on October 18th, I think at around 2 p.m. as well. So we'll see you then, and we can use the same link, right, the SurveyMonkey link, for that next call.
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you guys so much.
Thanks, everyone. Bye.
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 Thanks, bye-bye.